Hari Heko Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 35. Lesson 12. Above these two potencies is situated the Almighty Godhead. 7, 6 to 7. 7, 6. All created beings have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. Right? So all created beings, they have their source that they're from the Tathasta Shakti, and they have been, their forms, their bodies are created from the material energy. Right? So all living entities are like that. Right? So then the point being made here is that the Lord is above them. Right? Because we're trying to establish the relationship between the living entities and God. Right? So from different angles. Okay, so explain how the spirit is the basic field of creation. Pratigya. Spirit is the basic field of creation, and matter is created by spirit. Right? So spirit is... spirit here, we're meaning Brahman. So Brahman is the basic field of creation. Right? So matter is created by spirit. It means because of the desire of the living entity, therefore you have the manifestations. Right? If the living entity doesn't have a desire, there is no manifestation. Right? So it's being created as it was before, because the living entities have desire. No, but it runs the same patterns. They're running through the same modes, so the same patterns of life and same patterns of activities. So the same facilities are always created. Right? Narad Muni is mentioning that in the last, you know, universe that he was in, then it was the same as here. You know what I'm saying? You know, it might be, you know, this city's over there, that city's over here, but the principle of a city, you know, of a field, of a mine, you know, of a forest, of the animals, people, what they do, everything's exactly the same. You know, it's just like you go from one country to another. It's the same. Right? You know, there's some slight little differences of this and that, but that's always there. Right? But the principle is the same. You know, we'll say the Western world. But you go and each country is different, but we'll call them the same. Right? Because the principle is all the same, how they work. Right? Your third world, anywhere you go in the third world, it's all the same. Right? Just some places are more clean and some places are more dirty. Right? We happen to be in one of the dirtier ones. Right? You know, so, yeah. You know, so spirit is the basic field. The difficulty is when we think matter is the field. When we say the field of activity, we think it's matter that's the field. You know, okay, the field is, you know, all this material energy. No, it's not. Brahman is the field. Right? But you're dealing with two kinds of Brahman. The jiva is Brahman, and the external potency is Brahman. Right? So according to the desire of the jiva, then the external potency manifests. Right? And not seeing that the field is Brahman, that's illusion. So that's where Maya comes in. Does that make sense? So here that we say spirit, that's the basic field. And in reality, the real element of the field is that it's the living entities that create the field. Right?
Mm.
That's what we're not catching. Because they have a desire to be in a situation, so that situation is created. So you could even say it's simply the desire of the living entity. Right?
Mm.
And you can also say here's matter is created by spirit. You can even take it further, is that in the primary creation, then the Lord and his internal potency, then on this platform of Brahman, they establish all the different forms and activities that can be performed within the material world. Right? So therefore, because of the desire of the Jiva Brahman, then the Lord and his Brahman feature then creates the environment, the principles on which the matter Brahman can be transformed into. Yes.
Does the materialist also think he creates the field, only he thinks the field is matter?
Does the materialist feel he creates the field? Yeah, it means because why would you call something a field?
Because there's room for some situation or some activity.
Yeah, but which means, but someone else's field you're worried about?
No.
Only your own, right? So therefore, the living entity will feel, I am creating this. I am making all this happen.
Mm.
That's the difficulty,
mm.
is that it's always about themselves.
Mm.
But it's about themselves as matter. You know, me, my body, and my mind, my intelligence, we have created this field. It's not understood as, no, I'm the soul.
Mm.
And even this body and all that's been created by matter. But because of spirit.
Mm.
I as spirit desired it, and the Lord as the Supreme Spirit manifested. You know, I mean, how you say, gave his sanction and his potency, so therefore it could be done. Like that. So the real point is, it still comes down to the living entity and the Lord are interacting. Those who understand that, they're liberated. Those who don't, then they're conditioned. You know what I'm saying? The idea that a living entity gets away from God, you know, it's not a reality. It won't happen. It can't happen. Right? It's just a matter of whether you recognize it or not. You know what I'm saying? Is that make sense? Yeah. So it's just like, yeah. So you'll get the. Okay. Okay. Then the next point. Hate to reason. Spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. Rather, this material world is manifest only on the basis of spiritual energy. Right? Because it's the Lord is sanctioning, is taking the forms in that he defines. Like that. So it's his potency that anything functions. You know, we'll say, oh, this is the modern machine, man has made it, but it only functions on the principles that God gave. Right? Electricity still works the way electricity works. Right? You know, metal works the way it works, glass works the way it works, plastic works the way it works. So it's still it's all still God's energy, and it's still functioning the way God said it'll function. Now, we may be able to put things together, but that doesn't mean that we're the creators. You know, somebody goes, takes a tree, you know, and then makes it into a piece of furniture, then it'll be harder to be able to, how do you say? He would generally have a feeling that, you know, he's creating something, but out of, you know, something that God's given. If he's more smart, he'll understand that, you know, God gives the ability and the intelligence and all that. But if not, whatever, it's easier. But as the more you move away, it's a principle in the Vastu Shastra, is that Vastu or Pancharatra, where they're talking about buildings. See, you have those things that are directly from the earth. So if something's made directly out of earth, or, you know, bamboo, wood, you know, grass, leaves, these kind of things, then it has very little illusory power to it. Right? I mean, something is there, of course. We think it's my house, my this and that. But if you have a mud hut with a thatched roof, you know, or a bamboo hut with a thatched roof, there's not a whole lot of illusion about it. Right? You know, I mean, you might get into some kind of, you know, oh, it's so nice and so natural and that kind of thing. But still, it has its limit of covering. Right? Now, as you process, the first stage is you process that. Right? So then you take the earth and you fire it into a brick. Right? So it's still natural. Right? And then you're using the lime and all that as the mortar. You know, or you take the earth and make tiles. Then it comes a touch more that illusory covering comes. Does that make sense? So when it's defining architecture, it's defining you have the one that's closest to the natural. Then you have the next stage where you take the natural and basically in its form, just transform it enough to make it more permanent, right? Instead of puppy like this. You know, you have the wooden thing, but then you make it very nice and you finish it or you lacquer it or other things like this. It takes on another level, right? Then when you get into like where you actually do major transformation, like metals and other things like that, metals, glass, you know, like that, then that takes it to another level of, you know, more shiny and more like that. And so then something like, you know, plastics and other, would be even another level. You understand? So the more farther it gets away, the more that illusory covering is there. Does that make sense? So then we become distracted. But it's manifest only on the basis of spiritual energy, the desire of the jivas and the potency and sanction of the Lord. That's what's going on. Right? Material energy is simply the medium through which it is made. Right? Like just like how means if you look at it in reality. Why is there a painting? Right? It means you have these master's paintings. Right? Why are they there in reality?
It's inspired by life, by spirit.
Yes, okay. But now, just in practical, why did it go on? Why was that picture, why did that picture happen?
Because it's sort of
imitation of creation.
To make the situation more permanent.
Yes, but then, but, who wanted to make it more permanent?
The
guy who commissioned it. And then who painted it?
The artist,
right? So actually it's two living entities, right? It's spirit. But the medium is matter, right? So your canvas, your oils, you're like this. You understand? So the manifestation is through matter, but the reason that it's happening is because of spirit. You know what I'm saying? But it's very rare you have a painting if it's not going to somehow or another, you know, go from the painter to someone else. Does that make sense? Yes.
As Prabhupada says in the purport for that example is, he says one should not get confused between the painter, the painting, and the easel.
Yeah.
I did. So.
You did. Yeah. You thought, I am the easel.
No, I wasn't sure.
And so that's why you couldn't paint.
I wasn't sure what
you have to think you're the canvas.
I wasn't sure what was what, you know.
What was what?
Okay.
The painter's the one that kind of has the arms and fingers and picks up the brush and kind of mixes it around and makes that kind of mess on the board that we can't understand, that they seem to understand very well. Right? The canvas is the thing that he actually paints on. And what the canvas sits on, that's called the easel. So is that clear now? Is that what you meant? Or?
No. according to this Siddhanta, it's not Siddhanta.
Okay, means you have the, in this case, well, it could be he's either making it that it's three things, or he's saying that you have to be able to tell the difference. Means you have the material energy on which something is based. Then there's the specific function that's happening, which is the painting. And then you have the painter, right? Like that. So the painter means you have the jiva, but at the same time as you can also say that you have the Lord. You know what I'm saying? Because it's the Lord who's actually making the things happen. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So it means, in other words, the nature is so beautiful because that's how God arranged it. but someone else is taking care of it. You know, does that make sense? Okay. Then we have. Then explain. Okay, so now next points are about how the super soul is the original cause of the universe, and how refuting the statement that we also create like God, right? Because that's the problem that comes up. Okay, Udaharana. This material world is developed because spirit is present within matter. A child grows gradually to boyhood and then to manhood because that superior energy, spirit soul, is present. Similarly, the entire causing manifestation of the gigantic universe is developed because of the presence of the super soul. Right? So you have, right, the soul's in the body, therefore it so many things happen. Right? So, and the Lord, the super soul, is in the universe, therefore the universe is happening. Right? Does that make sense? So it's only happening because the Lord's there. But what happens is specifically according to the desire of the living entity. But what can happen is by the Lord's arrangement. You know what I'm saying? So the universe is there. What are the facilities? But what you do with them, that's what the jiva does. Does that make sense? Like, let's say you have a living room, right? So then the living entity will go into the living room, and then according to what he wants to do, sit here, stand there, do whatever he does. Right, but then if you have a kitchen, then they'll do different activities. Right, so in other words, the environment is already created by someone else. What can be done? Right, but the jiva is just within that makes these choices. Right, so he's small in this. Yes.
You said that because the jivas are present in the material universe, therefore the universe is going on.
Going on means that, okay, you have a city happening here. Why? Because God wants a city there, right? No, it's because the living entities have an interest. But the principle of what a city is, how you'd build a city, how you'd run a city, all that God's already created before. Right now it's just you follow, you know, through the modes, by the influence of the modes. The living entity wants to be involved in a city, so therefore the modes of nature take care of, and the city is created.
And the materialist or conditioned soul, they will argue that they can't see how a person or personages are in control of things like the wind or water.
Why? They want someone else? They want, you know...
They can't see the arrangement, or they don't have experience of a living entity controlling things which are more subtle, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, to the child... Yeah, I mean, if it's appropriate, it can be extended, you know, beyond the age of 16, okay? But in general, we're just taking... That in the house, the boy in the house, okay? How do the clothes get washed and ironed and put back into... Well, first of all, picked up off the floor. Then washed, ironed, folded, and put back, you know, in their drawer or cupboard or, you know, hung on the in the closet. How does that happen? Because he's conscious of it? No. Yeah. You understand? So a superior power is taking care of this, an unseen power, right? Right? How does food happen? Right? Just because he walks into the kitchen, as he walks in, it's there. Right? At maximum, we might see, you know, the mother, you know, doing something, you know, the last stage, that, you know, how much he can tolerate that last, you know, how you say, 4 or 5 seconds before he's got to eat, right? But what happened before that? How are there stock in the kitchen? Why are there pots and pans? You know, who's paying the gas bill or the electric bill? You know, who went out and bought the oven? You know, who got the guy to come and fix the, you know, the sink? You know what I'm saying? That is not seen.
first time I ever saw a dirty sink when I moved out of the house, out of the home, at about 19. And I realized, okay.
You were shocked. And then you figured out, is, wait a minute. This means I got to clean it. Mom!
God.
So then you told your mom she could come over and visit anytime she wanted. And ideally a few times a week, right?
Maharaj, this the jiva's desiring to create, where is this coming from?
The jiva desires to create because the Lord creates, yeah, right?
Because we're part and parcel of
it. Yeah, so it's there. But the point is it's still, he's independent, we're not. So that means he can create, we can take part in creation. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let us say, you know, give a rough example. It's like, well, it may not mean anything to you. Okay, like you have in a musical performance, right? You have the person who's singing or playing the sitar or something like that, right? Then you have the guy who plays the tambura, right? Does that make sense? So the tambura guy is only assisting in it. The music's being made by someone else. Does that make sense? You know? So, in other words, they have a musical interest, but they don't have that same ability. You know? So you see it in everywhere. In the kitchen, you have the cooks, but you have all the other guys who, you know, wash or cut or assist. You know, construction, the main guys and other guys that carry things around and everything like that. Oh, it's just as a side point. They were doing a test the other day, one of the schools on Varnashram. And so it was supposed to define, you know, Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, right? So then in the definition they came up with, Kshatriya is one who protects the people from Maya. Right?
Sounds good.
And then a Shudra was a guy that doesn't have much intelligence, so he has to carry around boxes and stuff like that. So I guess that's like a 10-year-old's view on Varnashram. Okay. So does that make sense? So it's in other words, we have that interest in it, but we ourselves can't actually do it. But the desire, then the Lord, through his energies, gets that done, right? Through his internal potency, the external potency, then all these things happen. But the point is, because they desired to, it's because for God, being God isn't the big deal, right? For us, it's a big deal, right? We're the big guy, we're in charge, we're the power, because we're not. You know what I'm saying? But for God, being God is pretty normal. Right? And he has no competition. You know, so he never has to worry about, there's no insecurity. You know what I'm saying? That somebody from some village somewhere decides he's God, it doesn't get him upset. It's not like Indra, you know, some sage is doing austerities, he gets worried. It's not like that. You know, so it means the whole universe could, you know, say they're God and it wouldn't matter.
I can also see that the analogy that you gave us before about how much a child can do in a sandbox, that kind of like relates to what's happening here as well, isn't it? It's like we're like constantly wanting to create something, but it's like, you know, it's like all under pressure.
Yeah, yeah. One may say, oh no, but you know, we build permanent things. Yeah, it's just like, just look at, you know, the skyline of any city and how long is it there for?
Mm-hmm.
They put up this big building, like now, and I don't know what it is now because it may be out of date, but when I was there, oh, maybe a long time ago, like 6 years, we were in Hong Kong in like, what was that? Oh my God. 74, right? So then you had on like the main roads, like Nathan Drive, what is it called? Nathan whatever something. Then, you know, you had these 20-story buildings, right? But everything else were these, like, you know, 5, 6, 7-story buildings, you know, residential, you know, regular standard, like, Asian-looking, you know, places to live. And then when I went back and visited in... yeah, that was, what did you say, 74. So like 2004 or something like that. Then you can't build a building, I think, less than 50 stories tall. So now they knock down 20 or 30 story buildings and put up 50 story buildings. You know what I'm saying? So one could say, no, but we're doing permanent stuff. The kid in the sandbox, you know, is making some temporary stuff. But it's like, you know, the same buildings that were there when I was there aren't there anymore. You know, they're knocked down and they put up bigger ones. Does that make sense? So it's always like that. You know, and then you have the thing is, you know, they build in the sandbox and like that. And then you always have the guy that's got to smash whatever somebody else does, you know, like that. And then they say, oh, well, that's very juvenile, like that. Yeah, and so then but the difference is there he used his foot. The other one, you come in a plane and bomb the place. Then you're considered an adult, like that, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same principle, like that. But it comes back to control. You know, I'm the creator and the maintainer. I'm the destroyer. Well, generally, we're the creator and destroyer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the moms, they maintain. But, you know, everybody else creates and destroys. So. And is that so? Okay. Upanaya. Further explanation. Right, because in other words, you've given the reason, then you give the example, then you give further explanation, means where you now simply bring them together, where you don't see the difference. Therefore, spirit and matter, which combine to manifest this gigantic universal form, are originally two energies of the Lord, and consequently the Lord is the original cause of everything. A fragmental part and parcel of the Lord, namely the living entity, may be the cause of a big skyscraper, a big factory, or even a big city, but he cannot be the cause of a big universe. The cause of the big universe is the big soul, or the super soul. That's interesting, the big soul. It's the small soul and the big soul. Well, he uses a fragmental part and parcel, not even the, a, right? And then you have the big soul. And Krishna, the supreme, is the cause of both the big and the small souls. Therefore, he's the original cause of all causes, right?
In Swahili, the title for Back to God is Wana Ki Mango. It means one goes back to the big boss.
The big boss, okay. Everybody goes back to the big boss, okay. Yeah. Okay, so now Krishna means you have the small soul, the big soul, and then Krishna is the source, cause of both, right? So Krishna creates the universe, right? And the living entity can do something within it, right? Does that make sense? And then the dead matter, because now we're not so much discussing the dead matter, you know, it's been discussed before. Yes?
So in this further explanation, I don't understand clearly the mixing of the reason and the example.
Because you're dealing with two levels at once. You're dealing with the soul and his concept of creation, right? Then you're dealing with the Lord and the actual creation, right? So in here is that, and the point is that the material energy is subservient to both. You know what I'm saying? So now, the jiva is wanting to create, right? So then he can make his, you know, whatever it is, you know, skyscraper, a factory, a city, you know, like that, you know. So, okay. And then, but he's having to work within the laws of God, with God's energy, right? And with God's potency, and with God's sanction, right? Well, yeah. So the point is the universe means God has established the elements that you can create from. He has created what can be created, how it will be created, you know, and what is required to create it. You know, in other words, what piety do you have to have or impiety to create it? So all the standards, all the principles, all the standards, everything are set by him. Right? But that's unseen. Right? Because the Lord is immanent. Right? So you don't see the Lord. I mean, his potencies are there, but you don't see it. So the living entity then is trying to does his creation, but he unfortunately thinks, I'm the one doing this. He doesn't understand it's the Lord that's actually doing it through the material energy. So because of that, that confusion comes up. So we're pointing out is that, first of all, the overall point is that the material, the living entities, and the, you know, and the material energy are subordinate to the Lord, right? But that's necessarily in self-realization. But then the next stage, where the living entity means that this material energy, what we call the material world, is actually based on spirit, the combination between the big soul and the small soul. Right? So that's why the two have to be explained. Because our endeavors, our activities, we will think it's coming from myself. Right? But the problem is it's not. We have the desire, but that desire is being fulfilled by the Lord. Right? Oh, that's what we were discussing before. Is that, so for the Lord, being God is not the big deal. Right? So for him, it's interacting with the living entities. So for him to create the facility for interaction is not a problem for him. And even if someone else thinks, no, I'm creating this, right? Then it doesn't bother him, as long as the interaction goes on, right? It means for the child, they don't think about it that, you know, the reason there's a house to play in and interact with the family members because the parents arranged it. Right? You know? Does that make sense? So the parents arrange the house, they arrange the furniture, they arrange how it's set up and all that. Then in playing, you know, the kid wants to take a cushion off of the sofa and create a fort and that way then interact with the parents. You know, for them it's fine. You know, as long as it's within the rules, right? You know, you don't take the balls off and that's part of your... No, that doesn't happen. Right? You know what I'm saying? So there's as long as it's within the rules of the house, then how the child works with it is fine as long as it creates interaction. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so the point is interaction. You know, if the kid just stays in the room all day, then the parent's not very satisfied. Right?
This is a general principle.
It's a general principle. Is that what you said?
And in this Panchanya Nyaya, it's always the same system to get a general principle.
Yeah, it's always the same system. Because you have a point. Because the point here is, we say, spirit is the basic field of creation and matter is created by spirit. What's to argue with? It means you could find something, but there's nothing really to argue with. Okay, spirit's the basic field of creation. Right? You know what I'm saying? So there's nothing to argue with. But as soon as then I say the reason... Spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. Rather, this material world is manifested only on the basis of spiritual energy. Now I have something to argue about.
Yes.
Mm. Do you understand? Because spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. No, it's created because of illusion. It's created because of the combination of matter. You know, like this. Now there's something to argue about. And rather, it's manifest only on the basis of spiritual energy. No, it's not. Where's the spiritual energy? It's just, I'm doing this. So now we have argument. Right? So then you give your examples to get rid of that. Because, you know the soul's in the body, so things are going on. So that means in the universe, because there's the big soul is there, therefore things go on. Mm-hmm. Like that. And so we're making the distinction, because the point is that the soul is subserving it to the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense?
Right? So example should get rid of doubt.
Example is for getting rid of the doubt. Means, in other words, the reason explains your thesis, mm-hmm. but the reason is also the cause of the doubt.
Yes.
Right? And so then the Udaharana, the example, is to explain the reason to remove the doubt. Right? So some become confused and think that there's two systems of logic. No, it's one system. Because one will, like this. This is what Prabhupada uses, which is Gotama. Right? It means you have your thesis, reason, example, further explanation, and then supporting quotations from scripture and everything, or what, you know, what connects it to the next thing. Because once you've established one point, that point, you have the next point naturally comes up, right? Does that make sense? So it's natural. But at the same time, this also can be explained, where there's the thesis, then there's the doubt or the antithesis, then you get example. Like that, then there's the synthesis, and then there's conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, but all it is one is just your line of presentation, the other is including dealing with the doubt. Because if there's no doubt, what's the need of having a thesis?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? You know, it's means if everybody eats something in the same way, there's no problem, right? But if there's a difference, you know, somebody is like, you put the bread in the toaster, and when it comes out, as quickly as possible, you put the butter on it, right? Then, but the other school is, no, you take it out, let it cool, then put the butter on it, right? Does that make sense? But so, there's a doubt there. Why would you do that? You know? Because the one is like, your bread becomes soggy, and the other one is, how much butter can you get in when it's cold? You know, so you know what I'm saying. So one is looking for crispness, and one is looking for, you know, how you say, buttery obscenity, you know, like that. So you have two schools. So they have a doubt comes up. Does that make sense? But if everybody there's no need of it. So it automatically includes dealing with the doubt. It's just a matter of how you're defining it. So like that. So the two points of definition are the same thing. Like that. But, you know, Prabhupada used Gotama. Like that. But as we go, you'll see a lot more of the definitions sometimes will be used of the Vyas uses and Vedanta Sutra. Okay? So it's just standard. You say a point, and then, you know, you say this, and they go, what do you mean? And then you explain it. Then they say, no, you know, like that. You know, and then they'll say their thing, you say your thing. And then you have to somehow or another bring it together that, okay, what you're saying is, you know, this, you know, unless, of course, you're using Nigrahastan where you just crush it, you know. But otherwise, you know, so you brought it near, but in, you know, in pieces, you know, but whatever, like that. And then there's your conclusion. And then there's what's now the next step, you know. You know, so... Does that make sense? You know, like that, yeah.
So it means that in all the Acharya commentaries, they always use...
They always use this.
And the Vedanta literature always
use this. Vedanta Sutras always use this. It means this whole concept of Adhikaranas,
yes,
and the Adhikaranas, they deal with these points, but the Adhikaranas are presented through this form. There's always going to be your main Adhikarana, which is the thesis. Right, but all these other adhikaranas are also there because the points being made, they themselves, in themselves, can be their own points or theses. You know, we can say there's a big soul and there's a small soul. That could be our thesis. You know, what I'm saying. So therefore, every point of explaining the Panchanga Nyaya is an adhikarana, but they're all in support of the actual main one, the thesis. So therefore you could call them all adhikaranas or just the main one, right? So it doesn't get confusing on confusing. We just, you know, the main point, but they're all adhikaranas. That's how much like that. So this method, this is what the acharyas use. So it may be presented in that way to make it more clear, because generally those who study or deal with that level of study, then they're accustomed to that. So then they expect to see it very clearly laid out. Those who are not, it's still valid. It's just that you don't have to identify it. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, we're just taking from the purports and going through, and most likely if you check, these points of where they are in the purports are in order. It's not that this was here, we moved that up to here, and this and that. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes for the language itself, the English, sometimes two of them will be combined, just because it flows very nicely. But the point is they're always there. They're never not there. So it's just all the acharyas. That's why the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes the point, and Prabhupada quotes that in, you know, in intellectual circles, then it's, you know, discussion is in this form. Because otherwise, then it's just it's whimsical. It's just emotion, what you feel like. You know, so it's like that, you know, you got to do this. You know, says, you know, no, but why? You know, because this is, oh, but you always say like that. You know, like that. So now they've changed, right? They've changed the discussion. Instead of it being whether you're supposed to do this or not, it's that you always talk like this. You know, it says, and what do you mean? I never always talk like, yeah, no, but understanding that it's just all it is that this is technically what was called jalta, where you just change the conversation. So it's used in logic, but it's not considered. In other words, if you're only trying to win, these are all the techniques. But it's as far as real discussion, they're not considered proper, like that. You know, or another one is, you know, that you see all the time. Like when we go back, I don't remember if you remember back to our, how you say. You know, our neon Hitler on acid, right? You know, like that. Yeah, but if you'll notice in those conversations, that then they use another technique of logic, which is called chala. Chala means move. Means you've said the word like this, and they move the meaning of the word over. You know, so I said it's like this. Let me say. It means, like, let's say you're trying to say is, you know, it would be natural to do like that. And then you say, that's not natural, you know, it's made out of artificial ingredients. It's two different discussions. You know, one is whether it's, you know, an organic or natural, and the other is whether it's a behavioral trait that would be normal for in the situation. So they just switch the thing, because the point is it just want to win the argument. It doesn't, and the fun part is they don't even care what argument.
Yeah.
You know, it can keep transforming as much as possible, as long as at the end you win. That's all. You know, but that's why Krishna says in logic, I am Siddhanta, which means conclusion, right? Not because otherwise, Prabhupada mentions you can win the argument by nigrahastan. Means the person says everything, but you cut off all other ways to win, and then you just crush it. It means so they don't know what to say. Not that you technically logically won, just the argument stops. You know what I'm saying? So that's why a lot of times someone says that, so you say something really outrageous, and it just stops the conversation. So you can say you won the argument, but no Siddhanta was established, so therefore Krishna is not there in that manifestation. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that when it's done in this form, then Krishna is manifest. Because you're taking a point, you're going through it in logical steps, dealing with whatever it is there. That there are doubts is not the problem. It's that someone wants actual to know what is the conclusion, so that as it's presented, it can be done. And if you need to explain further things or side points, that's fine. Right? So it's not that there's a debate arises as the difficulty. The difficulty is in that debate, the only interest is in winning rather than establishing truth. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. Right? So there's so many techniques that are there. One is you know them because you know how to properly apply an argument. The other is you also know how to catch those who are not applying the argument properly. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like Ishupanishad mentions you learn knowledge and ignorance side by side, because if you don't know them both, someone could be applying ignorance, you don't understand that, because you only know knowledge. So you get bewildered. So you have to know the tricks. So then you know what to say. You know, because otherwise then if he says, no, but that's not natural, that's made out of artificial ingredients. And it's like, so what is made out of artificial ingredients? You know, it works. No, but you know, you're destroying the environment. And, you know, it's a completely different discussion. When they say, no, but it's not natural, he says, it's just not organic. And he says, what has it got to do with organic? We're discussing natural in the way of behavior, not what it's made out of. Mm-hmm. So then that stops that direction of their argument. You know, they say, no, but natural things are important. And he says, yeah, but that's a different discussion. You know, so then it brings it right back. So if you know the techniques, then it avoids the problem. Does that make sense? So that's why logic being studied with philosophy is standard. It's called anvikshiki, right? You have logic, nyaya, and you have philosophy, right? Mimamsa. But when the two are combined, that's called anvikshiki. Does that make sense? Yeah.
More on this next year.
More on this. Generally, the logic isn't for the morons. That's the difficulty. Right? Yeah. More on this next year. Yes. Because in the six systems, it comes up. So at that point, we'll try to get into it so we understand it. Logic is standard way of discussion, but using it as a philosophy, now that's a bit weird. Right? It means logic is there to support philosophy. It's not that it is the philosophy. You know, that's where Gotama kind of missed the point. His logic is good, but that's philosophy, that's the problem. Yes.
Initially it was mentioned that the soul is the field in Brahman.
It means here what we're saying is the basic field of creation. Spirit is the basic field.
Right.
But the detail will be the material energy itself.
Mm. Also in Bhagavad Gita we'll come across field of activity.
But that's directly taking now you're going to interact with the field.
Are you referring to the body?
No, but the field includes all of it, right? It includes the soul. Right? It means you have the place of action, right? You have the elements of action, right? You have the senses, right? So that's all the material energy. Then you have the living entity, and then you have the super soul. So you have those five. So the basis of this, that there will be some variety of creation, is that the soul and the super soul are there, right? Now, what is the manifestation of that creation? That's material energy. So you have the situation it's in, the elements within the situation, right? In other words, the place, then the circumstance, right? And then the senses that will be used. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not that there's a difference here. It's just trying to point out that it's spirit that actually is the basis, because without spirit there is no creation, right? It means that without God there would be no creation, but without the desire of the living entity, why would there need to be creation? You understand? It means we already have the spiritual world, which is not created, is already there, right? So why create, you know, a whole parallel, you know, state of existence? It's only because the living entities desire it. You know what I'm saying? It means you know, you have a house. So why do you have to make a little house out in the backyard? You know, because the kids want to play in it. But otherwise, why create it? Does that make sense?
I was thinking for the dog.
For the dog, okay. No, that's because you want it. You have this stinky dog in your house. No, he's out in the back. Right? Yeah. Oh, you mean is you were living in the doghouse?
Compared to the spiritual world, then.
Oh, okay.
In no
okay.
sense, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the small dog and the big dog, right? Yeah.
Krishna, it's the tools of both the big and small soul. Could there be some misunderstanding that he's the source of himself? Because he's not created.
He's not, means he's the, means in other words, he has expanded. So that there is Vishnu is himself is doing that. You know what I'm saying? But that there's a particular manifestation within the material world, that's because of the living entities. Does that make sense? So in other words, you have to know on what level the jiva is functioning and what level the Lord is functioning. Because otherwise, there's always that point of trying to say that they're equal. Right? The Mayavadis are always trying to say that they're equal. Right? Because that was the point that we're, that this, all this, this whole line of Adhikaranas are running, because there's the two theses is that life comes from matter or the living entity is equal to God. Right? Because that's their conclusion. If life comes from matter, it's all about matter. Right? So just, you know, enjoy it while you can, you know? But the other one is that whatever you do, you're going to get to the point where you become God. So you always have to establish that the living entity and God, though some points are similar, but the volume is very different. So there's always the living entity will be small and never be equal to God. Does that make sense? The big and small meaning the jivas. So he's expanded as Vishnu, he's expanded as the jivas.
The big soul
here means Vishnu.
The end of the further explanation.
Okay. The cause of the big universe is the big soul or the super soul, right? So he's saying here's the super soul. So he's expanded like this, and then the super soul. So even Mahavishnu expands as Garbhodaksha, as Kirodaksha, right? And then, therefore, spirit combined to manifest the gigantic universal form, originally two energies of the Lord, right? And consequently, the Lord is the original cause of anything. So there's your point, right? In one sentence, right? Combined. Therefore, spirit and matter. Okay. Yes.
I'm interested in the nature beings and how they create, because...
How nature creates.
Yeah, I could remove the human beings for a while and just observe nature, how it creates. It seems to be quite perfect in a very harmonious way. And as soon as human beings come in the picture, they kind of mix things up. It seems to me...
Well, it depends what kind of... I mean, if you remember before, we were discussing six kinds of living entities. You had Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Shankara, and, you know, Antyajas. You know what I'm saying? So when you have the modern enlightened Antyaja, he always makes a problem. Right? But if you have, you know, you're just kind of simple, you know, who would... In other words, those Antyajas that would be classified by the more sophisticated Antyajas as less sophisticated or as tribals, you know, then those ones generally have a tendency to classically work with nature.
Do they act out of ignorance or out of
No, that means they're in ignorance, just that there's an understanding. They have because they are living in a simpler environment. They understand that I'm not in control. See, that's the advantage of the simpler living, is that you understand I'm not in control. When it's hot out, it's hot. When it's cold, it's cold. And I don't make the hot or cold. I mean, I can make a fire, I can go under a tree, but that's, you know, like that's what I can do. But even that, the nature of fire I didn't create, and the nature of the tree I didn't create. You understand? And does that make sense? And they see the cycle of, you know, of birth and death, you know, so it's, you know, I'm here, I'm eating what's here, and then I'll die, and then I'll turn into something that somebody else eats. You know what I'm saying? So they see these things.
But does this mean that they are in connection with God consciously, or not?
No. That means there's a little bit, but it's very mild. Like that. No, you don't put them into this thing that they're the ones that are, you know, like that, or the things like, you know, the babies up to the point they talk and they're enlightened and they know everything. As soon as they talk, they forget everything. You know, all these kind of things. These are really nice for, you know, people that have gone to university and sit around and have nothing else to do. They think of this kind of stuff. And if they can write a book, then they maintain their seat, they get published, they move up. They don't, they kind of get pushed to the wayside. So it's not really... This is not the point. The point is someone's conscious of God, you know, they're God conscious. They're not. So that means they are to some degree. They may be more than your modern man living in a city. Because he looks at it that, you know, he's created it. He's in his air-conditioned house. He walks into his air-conditioned garage, gets into his air-conditioned car, drives into the air-conditioned place for his car, gets out and walks into his air-conditioned office. So as far as he is concerned, he's in control of nature. You know? So he's not God-conscious, though he's sophisticated. So you can say this other is, in a simpler way, more God-conscious. But now... If you can make this modern person God conscious, then there's no difference. You know what I'm saying? Being God conscious is not something any human being can do it. Does that make sense?
And so would it mean that if one becomes God conscious, they would become more conscious of thought in nature, the harmony in nature? Would they work with nature better?
But that's a later stage. That's a detail. The point is are we working in harmony with the universe? Means what the universe is meant for. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Is that the universe is meant to be God conscious? So are we being God conscious? So whether we're in a natural environment or not, you can still be God conscious.
Right.
Now, if you had a preference, then, you know, gradually as one becomes purified, one works for the natural state. But there are those who live in that natural state, but they're not actually very God conscious. Because the naturalness of the world is not the point of the world. You know what I'm saying? The naturalness of the world is so that we are able to, through nature, appreciate God. Right? So if it comes down to that, you know, we'll be, you know, the devotee is thinking that, you know, unless everything's natural, then it can't be offered to Krishna, or unless it's vegan, it can't be, all these different things. These are, their priorities are wrong. They think that their diet itself is somehow or another, on its own, a symptom of God consciousness. No, it's being conscious of God is God consciousness.
And then the other things follow.
The other things follow. Not that they're not important, but one has to know the priority. God's first. Then, you know, working with his, you know, then working, you know, what he feels is the most important is there. And then, because the creation, that's what goes on. The animals do it. So it's the natural environment, but it's not the most important element. Because if we look at it, nature in its, you know, pure state, what's going on? What are all the animals doing? Right? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's all. They're not doing one thing more or less. Right? So now, human life is meant to understand God. So in other words, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending should go on in a natural way. But God consciousness is the principle. And so one should never think that God consciousness is dependent upon the natural lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? Because then we're limiting, you know, if God consciousness, the process of God consciousness or bhakti is non-different from the Lord, we're limiting the Lord. Mm. You know, and it's also according to our values.
Yeah.
You know? Does that make sense? So it's by modes. It goes in a certain way, and it always follows certain patterns. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The person's in nature, you know, in the Western paradigm, because there's a certain mode, then they won't be into guns or violence. Right? No, they have to be, and they'll figure that's better. But now, they're talking about living the natural lifestyle in that. So there's a tribal. He's living a natural lifestyle. Does he have a problem with weaponry? Does the tribal have a problem with weapons? Not at all. Right? But he's living the natural lifestyle. So he sees then his other modes. So that's why if you just work on the modes, it's inconsistent. You know what I'm saying? That would be the difficulty. You know, so then, you know, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of understanding which is first and that which is. Yes.
You say that intention to be creator comes from God in immediate entities.
Oh, okay.
Inclination. So, in the case of Brahma, the living entity wants to create for God, like excuse it. It's excuse for returning back to God.
No, it means that the living entities, they want to live separately from God. So someone has to create the facility. So that's what Lord Brahma does. So he's doing it as an officer for the Lord.
Well, his desire to create pure? Or?
No. I mean, see, there's two things. There's the activity. Who's qualified for the activity? It's just like this. Let us say the person who comes in and does your interior decorating. Okay? Now, let us say, you know, he's recognized in the field. Okay? So is he qualified? Yes? Means he could come in, you know, look at your house, look at you, ask a few questions, and tell you what you should have, or give you the options, and then you choose, and then he'll refine it down, and he'll get it done. Right? Does that make sense? So, but now, as a person, in his personal lifestyle, is he qualified?
No.
You understand? He might be, he might not be. In a sense, it's two different things. So, Brahma, he has the piety to be able to be involved in the creation, but it doesn't mean he has that pure desire that he's only doing it to please the Lord. Does that make sense?
Sometimes Prabhupada says that the first step, leading entity, does from the spiritual world to the material world by desiring to be Brahma, like using.
No. It's not he desires to be Brahma. That is the first position he's given when his desires to be separate from the Lord.
And God provides him opportunity to be Brahma.
That's the first. Every living entity who comes into the material world comes in as Brahma, generally speaking, you know, unless you've made more of a mess before that. But you come in as Brahma, you know, but at least, if not, Prajapatis are great sages. But, you know, it's not going to be anything less than that. But Brahma is the standard first position. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's a different thing. That's the result of previous activity. It's not he desired to be Brahma. He does, you know, he desired to be separate from the Lord, so therefore he's brought, put into the material world. Right, that makes sense? But you have no material experience as such, so therefore that will make you very pious. So then you, and naturally are Lord Brahma. Does that make sense? Supporting quotation from scripture and Siddhanta. This is confirmed in the Katha Upanishad 2.2.13, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam. Right? So there's two kinds of eternals. Right? But one is the cause, the support of the other. Right? So the big soul takes care of the little soul. Okay. Then,
what is the exact translation of this?
Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. I'm not sure anybody knows the... No, the translations.
There is one eternal and many eternals.
Yeah, one eternal, many eternals.
The one is conscious and all are conscious living entities. And one is maintaining... All one is maintaining...
All the others. Okay. Yeah. No, the point here is above these two potencies is situated the Almighty Godhead. Right? So now you're introducing. Then that 7-7, that's also part of this. Same point. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Right, so now he's saying how he is the Lord, right? Because before it was all created beings have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and dissolution. Right? And then, O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. And that means the point of this example is that you have a necklace. You just see the pearls. No one sees the thread. But if there's no thread, there is no necklace. Right? So that's the... So how do you know that the absolute truth is a person? There's a common controversy over whether the supreme absolute truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And this is confirmed in every step. In this verse, in particular, it is stressed that the absolute truth is a person. That the personality of Godhead is the supreme absolute truth is also affirmed. It is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha. That is, the supreme absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the absolute truth is the supreme person, the cause of all causes. Okay, so now we've established him as a person, right? Because we've established before the jiva as an individual, right? And then the matter as, you know, both as unconscious or dead matter and as Brahman, right? Okay. Then lesson 13. So lesson 13 now we're going into. Okay, this is part of the conclusion. Okay. As omnipotent Godhead is manifested as all-pervading impersonal supreme truth in one manner described. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon. The syllable Om and the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and ability in man. How is the Lord realized impersonally? And what is Lord Chaitanya's doctrine? How does it resolve the conflict between impersonal and personal? The Supreme Lord can be preliminarily perceived by his different energies, and in this way he is realized impersonally. As the demigod in the sun is a person and is perceived by his all-pervading energy. The sunshine, So the Lord, although in his eternal abode, is perceived by his all-pervading diffusive energies. The taste of water is the active principle of water. No one likes to drink seawater because the pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on the purity of the taste. And this pure taste is one of the energies of the Lord. Right? The impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste. The personalist also glorifies the Lord for his kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. Right? We catch that there? Mm-hmm. That's where the one turns into the other. Is that anything that you value, right? Because Krishna says he's everything. So that means whatever's there is him. He's pervading everything. But you're only going to perceive this everything through your own values. Right? So what you value is where you look. Right? So now you value the taste of water. Right? So water is important. But why? Because of the taste. Right? Because otherwise, it was just water was the principle. Why are there, like, you know, 10 different kinds of water on the market? And what's the difference between them? Right? Generally, the taste. That's the thing. They may have so many things written on the outside, but it's the taste that matters. Right? So, that's the first place you can see is, well, that taste that you've had, that's Krishna. Right? So then you can start to perceive where is God, because they're going from impersonal, that he's everywhere, into he's everywhere, but then specific, you know, localized, right? In other words, going from the Brahman to the Paramatma level, right? But it's all the Brahman platform, right? Does that make sense? Because the universal form is also Paramatma, right? Paramatma is the universal form. Right? So, here then, he can be seen in everything by these, right? So then, he's the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon. So, it means, if the sun and the moon didn't have any light, would they be important?
No.
Right? No. Nobody would care. Because they give light, that's why they're important. Right? The syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. Can you chant the mantras without Om? No, so it's Om is the principle. That's the bij. It gives it that life, that connection. So that's Krishna. Sound and ether. Right? Ether is there. It's space. But what do we find important in space? Sound. Right? If you go into this big place, right, what's one of the first things that somebody does? Yeah, they make some noise. They shout. They do something to, you know, experience how that space, the sound moves through the space, right? Like that. An ability in man, you know, that someone can do something. That ability is Krishna. You know, so whatever it is, but the ability is still Krishna. So that's the first stage. So one can find the Lord in everything. Right. So in other words, it's something that you're not seeing the Lord connected with. That's the first stage. Then the next stage is that by his grace he's giving such tasty water, or giving that ability, or making it that, you know, ether will carry sound. Otherwise, how do you, if you're supposed to associate with sadhus, and, you know, and if there was no ether or sound didn't move through ether, it would be really difficult, right? You know? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
I always wonder, here it says the taste of water is the active principle of water. I always wondered if maybe there was something lost in translation, because I was always thinking that, like, water actually is very life sustaining. It actually has more things to it than just simply the taste.
But what's the principal thing that you bring it? Let us say it's life sustaining, right? So now you're very thirsty. You drink water. Are you thinking, wow, this is so life-sustaining? Or you just go, this tastes very nice?
Well, actually, I do think how it
tastes. Yeah, but that's second. If it didn't taste good, if, you know, would you drink it?
No.
No. So the taste is your primary thing. It's not that all these other things aren't there, because it means, okay, let us take like the moon. So is it only the light of the moon that's important, or is it that it can generate that romantic kind of element, or that poetic element?
Well, the light of the moon actually has the potency to make the plants grow, so it's not, I mean, there's
yeah, but the, but,
just what your eye is to gain.
But it's also it, but it's also more to it than just the concept of health. You know what I'm saying?
In what?
Or in vegetables. You know what I'm saying? In other words, both of these, the common point between them is the is the nourishment coming from of life.
Correct.
Right? So but that's one particular perspective. So to say that there's more to the one than this, it's not that you can put this than the other. Because the point is what if there's no water, can you taste anything? No, according to the creation, then the point is why is the tongue wet? Without water, you can't taste. So the point is from water comes taste in the creation. Just like from fire comes sight, from air comes sound. I mean, from ether comes sound. You know what I'm saying? So you have all these things. These are prime. But in that, there's unlimited things you could take from that. I mean, just like, let's say you've mentioned those, but generally there's one principle that very generally the Western culture on the side knows it's there, but absolutely doesn't care about, is that water, it's one of its principal elements is purity. Right? You know, and devotees will fight like cats and dogs about that. You know, why do we have to, you know, all this fanatic stuff, have to wash our feet after going in the bathroom? I wore my magic plastic shoes. Right? You know what I'm saying? You can have hour-long discussions about that. Or why we have to use water? I mean, you know, God gave toilet paper, you know, so isn't that enough? Why aren't we satisfied? Why do we have to have more? Why are we always demanding more? Why can't we just be satisfied with the simple things of life? You know, we're not talking about, you know, that, you know, Russian sandpaper. We're talking about a good American, you know, four-ply toilet paper. You know? Yeah, you know. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, what I'm saying here is you can't look at it, means that is your value, but the principle is the same. That's your value, so you're going to look at everything from that vantage point of that value. But that's how you're going to find Krishna in it. Does that make sense?
So there is nothing really lost in translation.
There's nothing lost in translation. The point is catch the first one and you get the rest of them. Because it's a principle. In other words, taste is why one drinks water. You know, a particular water. You just like if I have 10 kinds of mineral water, you know, I mean, you have the Perrier from France and you have this one from, you know, that, you know, I'd say, you know, Ohm Mountain in Australia, and you have this one. Yeah, all these different ones. Which one are you going to choose?
The one that you like to taste.
Yeah, the one that you like to taste, right? So it's not that all these other considerations aren't there, but the point is the taste is the primary. So that's why that one example is given, because that's universal. Now, you could give so many more, because Krishna only says he's only given some. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But it's like this brick is here. It's red. Why? So that redness is Krishna. That hardness is Krishna. That, you know, particular shape is Krishna. You know? In other words, brickness is Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You can just keep going with it. Does that make sense? Like that. So, yeah. So the essential point is given, but the idea is you take the principle and you apply it to everything in your life that you don't automatically see it as Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Like in this case, then you look at something and then you're going to see the health or the nutritive value of it. But that's still not Krishna conscious. It may be more pious than somebody who's not looking at that. You know what I'm saying? It may be closer to the actual purpose of eating and drinking. Right? But it's still not God conscious. It's just a, you know, more developed, you know, piety. You know what I'm saying? But so the point is then from that, if you don't see Krishna in it, then you can find Krishna in it by taking that value. And it's Krishna that's that nutritive element. So that's why it's important. Not because it's got this vitamin in it, because that potency of that vitamin is Krishna. That's the reason. So therefore Krishna is so kind. Then you go from the impersonal to the personal. Therefore Krishna is so kind that he's, you know, given, you know, come as this nice taste or this, you know, power of these vitamins or, you know, these minerals, or does that make sense? You know, or
I mean,
or the fiber in the vegetables. Krishna is so kind, he's the fiber
really
of the vegetables.
To see how Krishna's in this taste, and this taste is life sustaining.
Yeah, but you're going from the one to the next. But it's also, the point is if you take it from Ayurveda, why do you need water in the body? Right? Because it goes through and it cleans the body. So it's actually cleansing. So the reason it is nutritious to the body is that it cleans the body. Because whether it has any minerals in it or not, if you drink enough, a bunch of water, it will clear out the body. If it has minerals, then it'll add that rather than, you know, lose that. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that's, you understand what I'm saying? In other words, we're taking it from a particular vantage point. So to think that, well, it's not just taste, it's also this. But that also this is still in the same principle that is your value. Because there's so many more things it also does. You know what I'm saying? Let us say, because water is rasa. Now, if you haven't drunk water and you're really, really dehydrated, can you interact with other people? No. So that means rasa can't go on. You drink water, then rasa can happen. So there's so many other things that are there. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so someone else will look at it, if I drink enough water, then my bowel movement will be regular. You know what I'm saying? Which is also, you know, one of the, you know, the yogi gets up, brushes his teeth, drinks his water, and then goes like this kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's like this, you can take so many points. So what we're saying is that's one point that you can take from. And then anything else you want to add to that, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So if you see the taste and the nutritive value, then that's fine. Or the taste and the, you know, other elements that are there, then that's fine. You know, and even if one doesn't notice the taste, you know, but whatever it is, that value is what where you find Krishna, because it can only be dead matter can't be value. It's that Krishna's potency within it. That's what's valued. Does that make sense?
So I was kind of like projecting my value.
Yes.
Value.
Yeah, onto it.
Wondering.
Yeah, that it's shortcoming. But then, like I said, there could be so many others. So the point is if Krishna gets into all that, we may kind of like lose it. Because for somebody, water and its taste isn't a prominent thing. They'd rather talk about, you know, like if you're talking about water, they're going to talk about, you know, the surf or something. You know, like that. Or, you know, the calmness of the lake. Or, you know something else. So therefore, he gives one thing that's universally appreciated. Like the light is sun and moon, everybody is going to say that they appreciate that, you know? Like that. Except for, you know, the party animal, you know, when the sun comes out, that kind of like blows the party, you know? Like that. You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, or the...
Yeah, I understand, actually. So I was actually adding my
value. Yes.
Just sticking with the principle.
Yeah, because the point is that, yes. Because it's the principle. Now, it's not that you... But the point is what Krishna is expecting, is that you'll apply this principle to your value. You know what I'm saying? In other words, that value of nutrition, then that value, it's still the potency of nutrition is Krishna. And so, therefore, if Krishna is very kind, that he's giving this. Does that make sense? So... That means this method is open to everyone. Anybody can apply it. So that's what's so perfect about it. And everyone can appreciate the impersonal, because that's where they're working. Because technically, if you're seeing something without its connection to Krishna, it's impersonal. You know what I'm saying? Like that. That's the whole That's the whole idea. Because personal means it's interactive. But here it's that we're not seeing it in relationship to God, so therefore it's actually just the impersonal element. Now, whether we're conscious of that impersonal element or not, so if we're not, that's illusion. If we are, then that's the first step in God realization. You know, the first step is to be able to see God in from the impersonal perspective we're already looking with. Then the next is then to take it to the person. Does that make sense? So it's a very... So we may say, but no, we're devotees, we see Krishna. But the thing is yes, those things that we do see like that, there's no need for it. You know what I'm saying? But in those areas that we don't, you know, it's just like we walk into the house. Why is that particular furniture has been chosen? Right? It will just go back again to a value. Right? It was cheap. You know, or, you know, a friend gave it to me, so it has sentimental value. Or it's practical. Or it looks good. Or it's not practical. It may not look good, but it's socially acceptable as, you know, this is the in thing to have. You know, whatever it may be, those are all values. So the point is, but Krishna is the practicality. Krishna is the aesthetic value or the social value. Krishna is all those aspects. So therefore, then we can take it from there and then see in connection to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because much of our life, we're not seeing connected to Krishna. Right? It means our rounds, you know, at least, you know, in principle we do, whether we're attentive when we chant or not. But in principle, if you ask, you know, what is this you're chanting? You know, it says God's name. We're not going to say, well, it's just, something. I got to talk. I mean, stuff like this. And so it's just, you know, it's like if I sit and talk to myself, people criticize me crazy. But if I say I'm chanting some mantras, then it's okay. So, you know, these guys chant this mantra. Okay? So I thought I'd do that, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know, so devotees in principle will say, you know, the deity is Krishna, you know, the service is Krishna, and all these different things. But the difficulty is they don't necessarily understand how that's working. And so even in things they'll see and connected to Krishna, then it's just like we're saying, you know, a common mistake is we're managing. And so it's the management that's important rather than the move. Right, or the collection of funds rather than the mood. So we're managing, so I can do whatever it takes to get the management done because the management's the devotional service. So I may not follow etiquette, I may not other things because, you know, the means justifies the end, you know, or the end justifies the means, or, you know, all these kind of these things. So, but if we understand, no, it's the attitude that's the devotion and the management is simply being applied, you know, because that's the medium for our conditioning to be connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say we prepare a very nice, nutritious meal and then offer that to Krishna. We're very happy that it's a very nice quality to offer to Krishna. But it's not that it's nutritious why it's devotional service. It's because the attitude to please Krishna. And we value nutrition, so therefore we will cook something what we'll value in connection to Krishna. What we have to understand is, and ultimately it's the nutrition that's Krishna. You know, and so it's just used as a medium to serve Krishna. It doesn't stand on its own as important. Just as, you know, the fine quality, yes, that, you know, it was a, you know, full color, you know, 70mm dream, you know, like that. Like that, like, you know, at least I can remember having one of those once. We were in Bangkok somehow or another. For dinner, they gave us chapatis and Kerala sabji. I'm not sure why. And because then afterwards sadhus, you know, drink milk, so then we, you know, had a glass of milk. Like that. That was like full technicolor dreams. I don't know. Some had the combination of the milk with the Kerala. It was like something really wild. So like that. You know, otherwise it's normally it's more pastel-y kind of, you know. Like this. But this was like full, you know, Disney color, and, you know, like that. So it's not that therefore that was a good dream. You know, it's still, material life is still a dream. So all these other things is, nutrition is only of a value if life is being used for God. If it's not, then somebody lives very long, very healthy, and you know what I'm saying? You know, so what? You know? Yeah. I think there was a guy, either in, you know, somewhere on the southern borders of America, a migrant worker. And one day he was, sitting and picking fruit, as the migrant workers do. And he, I guess, happened to be enjoying a cigarette at the time and lost his balance, fell out of the tree, right? So then he got, a standard procedure, got taken to the hospital. And so when he got to the hospital, then they, there's all kinds of, forms you have to deal with and everything like that. They found out the guy was 120 years old, right? Because he wasn't necessarily registered or in the system, right? Like that. And so, you know what I'm saying? So he must have been doing something right to be 120 years old, but he's not God conscious, so he's lived 120 years of what? Right? You know, picking fruit and smoking cigarettes, Does that make sense? So that's why the idea is that whatever our value is, it still only is a value if it's connected to Krishna. Otherwise, it's our value and our conditioning, and it identifies us within the conditioned state. But it doesn't have any value until it becomes real value until it's connected to Krishna. But because real value is based on what is value. You know what I'm saying? Like you have money, it's only real money when it's connected to Krishna. Right? Then it's Lakshmi. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is all money is technically Lakshmi. It's just a matter of whether you understand it or not. The potency, the economic potency, of these, of whatever is defined as something that you use for exchange.
Collateral?
Yeah, collateral, fair ten. I think it's fair ten. Oh, I can't remember what that is. But, it is that potency is Krishna. Right? Because otherwise, it's like, why does the same piece of paper with the same amount of ink and the same amount of artistic value, so one of them's only worth, $1, and one of them's worth $100. You know what I'm saying? And then they have ones that are worth $10,000 and stuff. We don't see them, of course, but they have them. You know, it's still the same piece of paper. You know what I'm saying? It means still you could only light one cigar with it. it won't have any more value. You know what I'm saying? So it's simply we define that. But that potency that we attribute to it, that potency is still Krishna. Right? So in other words, where we have values, then that's actually Krishna. Now, whether we recognize it or not, that's the point of becoming Krishna conscious or not. Does that make sense? So that's why we start with our values. Because just to say, everything's God, nice, but then what are you going to do? Right? Because it's not uncommon, the guy, it's all one and everything's all one and like that. Excuse me, I'll take a, double cheeseburger and, fried fries like that. Yeah, so then, we were saying about, it's all one, you got to be able to feel it, you know what I'm saying? It's like, where does it hit the ground? So it hits the ground at your values. Talk is nice, but it's our values, that's where the dynamic comes in. So whatever our values are, that's, the first place to look to connect our body, mind, and words to Krishna. Does that make sense? It means it's not being connected. Does that make sense? The direct ones are already. We're chanting, the kirtan, doing those things. But outside of that, you simply have to look at, well, what do I value in life? And then take that and connect. And what do we... Does that make sense?
Yes. All right, that's just on that point you said about the living entities being in the pure world for a very long time, and dealing.
You want to know how long that was?
Dealing with. I mean, it'd be nice, but not. But
real long.
Dealing with impersonal energy, like dead matter, and has become like that. So then, whenever one one's consciousness is like that, impersonal, materialistic. So then. By connecting these things and seeing the qualities of Krishna and everything, connecting the values of Krishna, one becomes more personal.
Yes, it means you become. In other words, the first step is becoming God conscious. Now, if you can go from matter to God as a person, that's best, because that's how we start talking. So if someone is able to surrender and apply that at that time, work is done. But if not, then what's distracting? Why is it someone's not fully surrendering? There's a distraction, right, in their life. You know, money, their sense gratification, their position in society, you know, particular, you know, some passion that they have. So these values, why is that of importance? It's only important because Krishna is that potency. So if they see that, then that's the first step in that area of God realization. Is that they're going to see that connected. Now it's you're dealing with Brahman, but you're not dealing with illusion. Means the matter itself is always Brahman, right? It's always been Krishna, but we're not seeing it that way. Now we're seeing it that way. So now we're God conscious. But the point is, the next step is Brahman is based on Krishna, right? Just like Brahman is coming from Krishna, so is Paramatma. Right? So that means, you know, the big soul and the all-pervading soul, that is based on the person. You know what I'm saying? So like that, you can go through these stages. So it's important, we can say, well, it's not important, we just chant Hare Krishna. It says, well, if we just chanted Hare Krishna, it would be fine. If we like Haridas Thakur, there's no need to discuss this. But I'm sure if you check, Haridas Thakur wouldn't mind discussing it, because as he traveled around, you know, how many other people were doing what he did, right? We hear of one other person, you know, I mean, in that particular form, right? Others are always absorbed in Krishna and always, so the eternal associates and that, then they're also, but they're not necessarily doing it on beads, they're doing it by other various services. What the point is it's the Lord's eternal associates, and those who are serious about associating with those associates, that you can count in that category. And everybody else, it'll be when they're more conscious, and then they'll remember to chant and do things. And when they're not, they'll forget. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that all these things you can use to catch what is that has slipped by, that you didn't notice. In other words, we're not conscious of it, so that's why we didn't make it Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? But as soon as we're conscious of it, you know, does that make sense? We could say, no, but the person was conscious of it. He wasn't exactly, you could say conscious, but it's not conscious what we're talking about. Because his consciousness is being driven by the modes of nature. Right? So he's only conscious of the thing as much. Otherwise, the animal is also conscious. But, you know, the element of God consciousness is not coming out. You know what I'm saying? So now you're taking it from just being conscious as an animal to being conscious, you know, in God consciousness. Right? And then from there you go to the person. That makes sense. You know? That the answer.
When we do the direct activities like chanting, and then we slip out and we are not conscious of what we are doing. So that time we come into the modes?
Yeah, I mean, you come into the modes, but it means the consciousness may be there, but you're still associating with Krishna. So there's still benefit. Otherwise, how is it that the neophyte devotee is advancing? Because it's not necessarily that they're completely focused on their chanting. You know what I'm saying? So it's by being in association with Krishna, you know, where one acknowledges that. One may not be always appreciating it, but one is still in that environment. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the indirect activities, that you have to be conscious to be able to get benefit. You're in your house, you know, and you're in your bathroom, and you're, you know, you got whatever it is you're doing. You're at your favorite, you know, this or that, or doing this, or, you know, you've got your important, you know, the soap from here and the desk from there, and all these things that you've gotten with great trouble from all over the world to say match whatever's that theme that you have. But the point is that all of that, where is the God consciousness? So if one is aware of that, then you can catch and then figure, okay, well, what is it? What is the consistent pattern between all these things? You know what I'm saying? You know, is it because this is what the stars use, so that's why I got it? Or this is what, you know, something else, or it'll keep me from getting old, or it'll make me, you know, this or that, or you know what I'm saying? You know. So whatever is that common thing is, so then what that's the value. So then that's what's Krishna. So Krishna is that element. He's that potency. So it's not actually the dead matter that's doing it. Because I'm thinking, oh, this you know, this beauty cream is making the skin soft. No, it's Krishna as the potency of softening that's in that's making the skin soft. Does that make sense? So by seeing like that, then one can move through these things. And then it breaks that illusion, that glitter. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So it seems to me that this is a vehicle, and this attitude is a vehicle to feel more grateful and to not fall into illusion, to think that this is my calling here, this belongs to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
To surrender to that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, anything. Gratefulness, you know, just gratefulness or appreciation that, you know, whatever it is, it's God, understanding the difference between matter and spirit. In other words, as we saw the previous ones, is that it's the spirit is the basis. Then the matter is simply the manifestation. So, in other words, the spirit is the basis. The reason that the nutrition is there means, in other words, nutrition is the spirit. Then it manifests through this vitamin or this mineral or this fiber or this, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for.
So it puts the priority in the right place.
Yeah, it puts it in the right place. So then one starts to see from this perspective of spirit instead of from the perspective of matter. Because right now we'll look from the perspective of matter. Now, this rock, you know, looks nice, but it's actually Krishna's potency that makes the rocks look nice. So it's actually Krishna that's looking nice. Yeah, so therefore now the rocks look nice, but Krishna as a person looks even nicer. So therefore, if I can make a nice garden for the person, then that would be the best thing, rather than I make the nice garden because I like gardens. But I'm able to appreciate that the reason the garden's nice is because Krishna is so kind that he comes in the form of these, like that. But it's now, you know, that will be... The next stage is make the garden for Krishna's pleasure. Does that make sense? So nothing's ever lost. All that's lost is who's the controller and who's the enjoyer, right? You know, so for us, that's a big thing. You know, but it's... Does that sound... Yeah? Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, when one understands his given nature, he's using it for Krishna's service... And you've also come to the awareness of Nishkam, focusing on what Krishna
right.
likes, as
mm-hmm.
opposed to what you really value, it's all about
mm-hmm.
Krishna values. Is the idea to eventually let go of this so-called Arvada nature or our value and just focus on Nishkam?
Yes, but it doesn't mean that the medium itself is lost. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it just becomes secondary.
It's secondary, because otherwise it's say the art, it's the passion, it's the life. Without painting, you know, you don't feel good. So, but the point is it's still Krishna who's that power. He Krishna is whatever it is from the painting that you appreciate. So then you start to be God conscious about it. Then it's by Krishna's grace that he is dead, and then I feel so good when I'm painting, and then why not paint for Krishna? So the painting is not lost, but the difference that I'm painting because it makes me feel good, and I'm painting to please Krishna. So the medium stays, but the mentality completely changes. So that's where you're saying God consciousness is, that's the whole point. The environment doesn't have to change. Right? We might, if we're painting for Krishna, we might paint different scenes than if we're not painting for Krishna. Does that make sense? But the painting principle, that's why it's important to understand what the actual value is. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, then we'll think it's a particular thing. You know, because if it's just aesthetics, it's not even painting. It's just painting is one way of, then it could be anything else than aesthetics. I could arrange flowers for the deities, or I could put up nice curtains, or, you know, I could arrange the room so everything is in nice balanced harmony. You know, I could find, so if I know that, then I can find even more outlets, you know, or what is useful. Okay, there's no opportunity to paint, but I can make nice arrangements. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's important to understand what the value is, you know, because it's part of self-realization. You know, what body you're dealing with, what senses, what mind, what intelligence, what is it? Then you know how to engage it. You know, and it's not a matter of artificially you have to sit down and say, no, it's just you think about it. As it comes up, then you start to notice it. But if, unless one's aware, it won't be noticed. Okay. You had something?
I was want to create this person, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the devotee sees this Ishtadeva in whatever he looks
at. Yes. Means it can be at any level. Means, in other words, he sees the Ishtadeva in everything, meaning that either by Krishna is this potency, or by Krishna's grace, then he is arranged it as a value, or it makes him think of Krishna, you know, and it goes off into the pastimes. It's just a matter of, yeah. Okay. So any of those, yeah. The impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste, and the personalist also glorifies the Lord for his kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. That is the way of perceiving the Supreme. Practically speaking, there is no conflict between personalism and impersonalism. We don't have a problem because Krishna is Brahman. You know? But the point is if we say it's exclusive monism, that there's only Brahman, that's where we have a problem. You know what I'm saying? Because like my brother just showed us these Krishna's shoes. Krishna's not the shoes, but it's his shoes. She reminds her of Krishna. You're actually taking the impersonal aspect. You know what I'm saying? But because in this case, being situated on the platform of love of God, then you're dealing with Bhagavan. So you don't have to go through the stages in the mind. You don't have to say, okay, I have this attack, then I have this, and then like that. It's just automatic. So there's no difference between the person in there, in you know, as the person in the localized feature, or in their all-pervasive feature. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So Krishna, you know, the house is you know, the house, just everything about it is all arranged to be nice for Krishna. So the whole thing, but it's just, you know, all pervading, or specifically this item, you know. But in any case, it always reminds them of the person, and always leads back to the pastimes. So on this, on that platform, they don't have to make any distinction between the three. Right? But we do, for the point of self-realization. But the priority is the person, right? The localized and the all-pervading is secondary. Is that okay? Okay. One who knows God knows that the impersonal conception and personal conception are simultaneously present in everything, and that there is no contradiction. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya established this sublime doctrine, Achintaveda Veda Tattva.
see.
Achintya Bheda and Abheda Tattva. Simultaneously oneness and difference. I guess they're taking from oneness and difference, Bheda and Abheda.
Yeah.
Achintya Bheda and Abheda Tattva. I mean, you could say Achintya Bheda. Maybe either if it's original, then it's point to point out that the two are there.
Mm.
Otherwise, we may not catch it. And if not, then whoever did the English, then somehow another...
Funked it up.
Yeah, connected the two, right? So the point is we don't have any difficulty with it. Because the point is that Brahman is that first stage. Right? Only because we're impersonal in that we just see matter. That's impersonal. Right? Even we see the person, you know, another person, that still technically is impersonal because we don't see the soul, we just see the body. So it's not actually the, like if I just started talking to your chudder or something like that, you'd say something wrong here. I have something on my chudder. Like that, you know. You know, like that. And it's like, so it's actually impersonal. So the living entities in the material world are technically all impersonalists. Though within those, some identify as karmis and some as gyanis. Right? Is that like that? So it's just, you know, all these different. It's always fun. Take something that we think and then it just turns it on its head, right? Yeah. So the two go together very well. And as one deals in that, it just more and more quickly just goes from, you know, the thing to the progression up to the person to where it's just simultaneous. Because if there's a non-difference, that means seeing anything of the subordinate nature will automatically make you think of Krishna, because it's Krishna. Right?
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jai Gaura Prabhupada ki